This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Suicide rates increased by almost 19% in Texas, according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The study, which analyzed nationwide data between 1999 and 2016, found that more than half of people who died by suicide in the U.S. during this time period did not have a diagnosed mental health condition at the time of death. What does diagnosis look like? How do you access this for healthcare and into prevention, and what circumstances like addiction, family, and financial instability impact a person's decision to take their own life? How are minorities and young people affected by suicide? Where can help be found here in San Antonio? We really want you to join our conversation. We want to hear your stories and your struggle and what you've seen and how you have battled off these demons. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this afternoon by Michelle Ramirez. She is the board chair of the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention South Texas chapter. Terry Mabrito, she is the executive director of the San Antonio chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Health Illness. And Carolina Hausman-Stabile is the professor in the Department of Social Work and Social Research Health Studies at Briar Mayor College. Her research focuses on the prevention and treatment of suicidal behaviors. And welcome all of you. It's good to have you here. And this is going to be a tough conversation. We really hope that we can hear from our audience, our listeners on this, 210-614-8980. So Michelle, we should always be talking about this issue, but right now it's come to the fore because we've had a couple of high profile suicides, but this is something that's been ongoing. So can you talk about that?
Absolutely. Unfortunately, in our state, in our community, people die by suicide almost weekly, if not daily. And so it definitely impacts us. And for every death we see, there's also 25 attempts approximately. So suicide is definitely a major problem in our state. And it's the second leading cause of death for those aged 15 to 34. So youth, young adults are definitely impacted. And one of the 10th leading causes of death in our country. And so we definitely see it impact our country, our state, our community. And we want to have those conversations early, prior to a crisis, to help reduce the stigma in our communities.
Terry, the statistic, I don't want to talk about statistics. We'll get through the statistics, and then we want to talk about people. But the one that stuck out to me was that people, you're more likely to die from suicide than from homicide, that people are taking their own lives at that rate. I think that's something that we should be, we spend so much time thinking about how to prevent homicides. We should be putting as much effort into trying to prevent suicides.
Yeah, so, you know, to prevent suicide, we have to back it up even farther. We've got to be talking about mental wellness and mental health really at every age. So we can start talking with our kids when they are in elementary school and when they're in middle school, when they're in high school. So if we're going to get at suicide prevention, we've got to take it all the way back to our young kids. And talk about mental health and mental wellness. If we can talk about that, then we can also talk about suicide prevention. You know, it's like, you know, years ago, cancer, Michelle talking about stigma. You know, you didn't talk about having cancer. Now that's a topic that we can all talk about, you know. But we don't still talk about mental health. So
right.
That's the key.
Not at the level that it deserves. So Carolina, I wanted to. I know you're focused on the challenges in the community of women Latinas. Is that right?
That's correct. Latina adolescent females have high rates of suicidal attempts, not so much so of death of suicide, and that also is aligned with a trend. Suicidal behaviors such as ideation, planning, and attempting are highly prevalent during adolescence, especially among girls. And this year, the CDC just launched its report for the Youth Risk Behavior Survey, which conducts every other year in high schools. And Latina adolescent females reported 10%, 10.5 of them reported at least one suicidal attempt in the previous 12 months. White girls reported 7.3% of white girls reporting attempting suicide, and 12.5% of black girls reporting attempting suicide.
So we're seeing a trend in that area, a disturbing trend.
We are seeing a disturbing trend of prevalent suicidal behaviors, prevalent hopelessness. About 41% of Latina adolescents reported feeling sad or hopeless. That's very high levels that speak about this idea of mental wellness or mental health. Why so many of our youth are feeling sad, hopeless, and are thinking that attempting to their life or dying is the solution for the problems? In a moment where technology and financial well-being have been unparalleled compared to the rest of human history, and where we have technologies to care for others and the health of others that have never been available before.
Right, so we want to try to dig in a little deeper in that throughout the hour. How can we do, even just with among ourselves, simple assessments with each other, talking to each other, looking for signs, what are the warning signs, and the earlier that we identify them, the better off we are. But the hard part about that is the stigma that we have, that when someone is identified as someone who has a suicidal thoughts, then they're going to be shunned in some way. Michelle?
That's absolutely true. The stigma is what prevents folks from seeking support or coming out, you know, and asking for help. You know, when someone is ill, they have surgery, they're going through treatment, they feel comfortable sharing online in their communities, in their faith communities, in their friend circles, at their business, and they receive that support, you know, cards, well wishes, prayers, meals. But if someone is struggling with a mental health condition or hopelessness or substance, any type of condition, they're not able to freely say that and have access to that same level of support because they feel it's going to affect their credibility, their careers. They're embarrassed. And sometimes it's something that they have no control over. You know, you have no control over a mental health condition. And so that's where talking, making it safe in our communities, in our businesses, in our churches, places of worship, to discuss.
Right. And people say this will make me appear to be weak. I'll lose status, and people will think less of me if they realize that I've had these thoughts. But the longer these thoughts exist, the harder they are to deal with. Help us deal with this stigma problem. You can call in. You can be anonymous. You don't have to give your name, but you can tell us your story. And your story will help others find a way to avoid the hopelessness, and they can realize that there is a way out. Give us a call right now, 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Tell us your story. Help someone else. The Source continues after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the thing that people don't want to talk about. That's suicide, and maybe the suicide thoughts that have entered your head, and how you can get help. The sooner you can address this, then the more likely it is that this can be dealt with before you start feeling that hopelessness and that despair. It becomes painful, and you have thoughts that there's no other way out. We can avoid that by talking about it this afternoon. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. Arthur is on the line. Arthur, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Yes, I just want to say I've been in a war with the military for 3 years total time, and I suffer from depression. I've thought about, you know, this concept, and I just want to say there's never a cure. Every single day it's a battle. for me. My ex-wife was depressed. She drank herself to death. And I just want to say that every single day, there's never a cure for this. You're always thinking about it. You're always wondering. But the good thing is I have kids, and I want to make sure that I'm here for them. That's why I don't step over that line. There's a reason for me to be here, and that's the battle that I have every day.
Arthur, thank you so much. Hopefully we can help you in that battle. Let me go to Michelle Ramirez. She's the board chair for the American Foundation of Suicide Prevention South Texas Chapter. When you hear Arthur talk about his daily battle against the darkness, what do you think? What can you tell him?
First of all, I'm sorry to hear your struggles, Arthur. And again, our chapter is not a crisis line. We don't do active services, but we definitely support families and people like Arthur that are facing that daily struggle, and we try to connect them with resources that can help you gain coping
skills. What are some
local
resources?
Well, NAMI is one of them that, you know, when someone is struggling with a daily mental health condition, post-traumatic stress, depression, anxiety, they have classes to educate and empower you so that way you can learn to cope and manage this daily struggle. Also, we encourage people to take advantage of wellness opportunities just in health in general. You know, follow up with physical health, you know, sleep, nutrition, hydration, exercise. All of those are protective factors that help you in coping with a struggle. And also the purpose and meaning, just like he mentioned, you know, he
right,
has
the purpose
to live
and meaning
for.
That Arthur talked about.
You know, finding what is your purpose, what is your meaning of life? Everyone has one. And sometimes it's hard to find when you're struggling and you can't really see it. But connecting with that is also helpful.
Terry Merbrito with NAMI here in San Antonio, the National Alliance of Mental Illness. Can you talk about the services that are available here?
Sure. So we offer a variety of classes and support groups. And the beauty of NAMI's approach is that we work through people just like Arthur, who have been through a lot, who have struggled, you know, with mental illness of different kinds, who struggle with suicidal thoughts. And we are able to train folks who want to be a part of, you know, giving back around this and being advocates for these kinds of issues. We train those folks, and then they give back to the community by providing teaching classes or leading support groups. You know, we have classes for parents who are caring for children who may have a behavioral health disorder, or we see an emerging mental health problem. We have a basics class for that. We have family-to-family classes, which allow families to talk to other families about their struggles in being caregivers. And then on for support, you know, we also have our connection support groups, and we have a peer-to-peer class that helps folks, adults who are living with a mental health condition, to be and have a community with others. And just being a member of NAMI, our local NAMI, we provide a monthly meeting where folks can just come together, and we have resources available that we talk with them about. And really, even more so than that, it's that sense of community that we can have around mental health and our challenges with that, whether we're living with it ourselves or whether we're a caregiver.
Okay, here's for another caller, Rosie. Rosie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
And our challenges.
Hey, Rosie?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I'm calling because I have a niece who tried to commit suicide on Tuesday this week. Her mother is very ill. She has cancer, and my niece relies on her mother for all types of support, financial help with her daughter. She has a young daughter. She's a single parent as well. And so it was, I think, she was also trying to be the caregiver of her mother. And it was overwhelming, as it would be for anybody, actually. Mm-hmm. But since she has this, I really don't know what to do. I don't know what to do, actually.
Rosie, thank you for the call. Let me see. Terry, since this is kind of right in your area.
Yeah, I think that some of the classes that we help would definitely help the whole family. The family can come together and learn more about what's going on with that person that's struggling, whether it's an adult in their family or if it's this young lady that's struggling. And so we would love for you to call our number and find out more about what might be the best fit for you. And our NAMI number is 210-734-3349. And for a young person, you know, there are certainly places in town, you know, services in town that can be helpful. We have a coalition that's working on the issue of teen suicide specifically, and we certainly have the mental health providers that are a part of that. And it would be, if she's not getting some sort of treatment and clinical support right now, then that would be something we really would want her to get. And if she calls NAMI, we can also refer and give out the different numbers of the different kind of providers.
So Carolina Hausman-Stabile, she's the researcher focusing on prevention and treatment of suicidal behavior, looking particularly at young Latinas. And as I hear the story from Rosie, I hear about a young woman who is dealing with a tremendous amount of responsibility and put in an impossible mm-hmm. situation, and mm-hmm. she is probably stressed beyond what should be expected, right?
That's correct. And also, I want to thank the caller for bringing up this topic. Also, the tremendous pain that this woman must be experiencing, this young woman. And we see a change in the trends, in suicidal behaviors, which are, we see more women engaging in deadly suicidal attempts, or more women attempting suicide. Even mothers, which traditionally had very low rates of suicidal behaviors. But I want to connect something that you said earlier, David, mm-hmm. with this situation. Stigma does not only manifest itself in the difficulty to talk about suicidal behaviors with our peers, with our family members, in our community. It also manifests itself in the lack of services, of mental health services and trained professionals who can help people who are struggling with these issues. And it also manifests itself in the lack of funding for suicide research and services for suicidal individuals in our communities. So as we see the trends in suicidal behaviors going up in the country, we also see a reduction in services and in quality services for people who are struggling with these issues. And that comes in part out of stigma.
All right, thank you. We're going to talk about trying to get more resources and deal with the stigma and its different levels, but let me go to another caller. And Liz, thanks for calling in. Liz, you're on the air.
Talk about trying to get more resources.
Yes, sorry about that. I wanted to say that, you know, young people are dealing with a lot more than they used to. I know as far as, like, young people going to college, they're worried about paying for college, they're worried about how to, you know, survive while they're in college, not just with tuition, but living and food. And then also, you know, when they get out, they're looking at raising a family and then having to deal with, you know, student loan debt and all that other stuff. It's no wonder that young people are, you know, getting more depressed.
All right, Liz, thanks for calling in. There's lots of issues today facing young people, a world that they're inheriting, dealing with climate change, political turmoil, all sorts of issues. Is that something that impacts that level of people, that they would drive them into thinking about suicide, Michelle Ramirez?
Well, there's many risk factors, you know, that combine to create this point of crisis. So there's health factors, you know, someone with an underlying health condition, mental health condition that maybe has not been diagnosed. And then you add those environmental factors for the students, you know, the stress of school, social media, you know, you have access to things that you...
Social pressure.
Yes. All of that social pressure, even if there's a bullying.
Because we're always,
you know,
being examined. You feel constantly judged. You have this spotlight syndrome, and it's impossible mm-hmm. to escape.
And then you have any family history. You know, maybe there's a family history of suicide in the family, any abuse or biological, you know, conditions.
So what do we do? How do we get people to develop the resolve and the resilience?
Well, the number one I think that we do is get them to start talking about it early on. When they start feeling that pressure, start learning coping skills for dealing with that added stress, added pressures. We can't change sometimes how bad things are, but we can change how we learn to cope and manage them.
I'm going to get another caller. And so this is John. And John, welcome to the source. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. I just had a short story to share. A guy I met years ago that had considered suicide all his life said that it was a temporary solution to a permanent, or a permanent solution to a temporary problem. And the day he finally realized he would never do it was the scariest day of his life because he no longer had that route of escape. It just struck me pretty hard.
John, thank you for calling in with that. Let me go to Terry Marbrito to your reaction. I mean, I've heard that before.
Yeah.
That it's a permanent solution to a temporary problem.
Most people who are considering suicide are still in a state of what we could call maybe ambivalence. So those thoughts are there, but there's always that bit of ambivalence. Most people want to stop the pain that they're experiencing, to rid themselves of all those kind of burdens that some of our callers have just described. And, you know, they want to, the suicidal thoughts are there, but the actual act of killing themselves is usually more at an ambivalent state. They want to get rid of the pain, and there is lots of help, and there is lots of support. I think we would all be more willing to get support if we were talking about mental health sooner. And so, you know, especially for young people, the caller that described all those difficulties of being a transition age youth, a college. Moving into the college world, if we're not talking about mental health at home during the middle school and teenage years, and parents aren't understanding all of the challenges that our teenagers are living with now that folks my age never had those influences in our life. You know, Michelle mentioned social media and things like that. So these days, the teenage years, and when I say teenage years, really brain development is teenagers all the way up to about mid-20s. So that encompasses college age. There are all these stressors. It's the perfect storm of hormones, social, emotional development, and our digital age. And it's a really perfect storm that other generations have not had to face.
And you combine that with other issues that people have, including addiction, mm-hmm. Substance abuse, also isolation that they may have in their life. Maybe they have been suffering from bullying, maybe other forms of shaming and shunning in their family for their LGBTQ. That's a huge area that needs to be talked about because we know that they have a high risk factor for suicide. We want to talk about that. So if we have greater acceptance of each other generally, maybe that be a way that we can try to bring this down. But we still know that in the United States, 865 people commit suicide. Not commit suicide. We don't want to say commit suicide. Take their own lives every week. And so we're going to come back and take a quick break. The phone line number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about suicide. Words really matter when it comes to talking about suicide. Earlier I slipped and I said, commit suicide. That's really, AP style book tells us which reporters use. We're not supposed to use the commit suicide because it's apparently a language that doesn't really describe the situation adequately. We were supposed to say a person took their own life. That's a way of wrapping our arms around the situation in a way that's less judgmental.
Yes.
And removes the stigma, and the stigma is a big part of the problem. The number to call in, 210-614-8980. Stephanie is on the line. Stephanie, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm calling because my father committed suicide in January of last year, and I'm also a veteran with PTSD, and there's a lot of times that I contemplate suicide as well. I completely agree with the way you said that they took their life instead of saying suicide. I just get really offended when they say that. But I want to know what, you know, I live in a small town and we don't have a lot of resources. And I want to know how they're going to reach the rural areas where we don't have those kinds of resources to be able to go to, for my mother and my family to be able to cope with the suicide, with my father that took his life.
Stephanie, thank you so much for that call. And so, Michelle Ramirez, in this day and age of social media connectivity, and we've talked about some of the negatives, but there are some positives because you can find online help, right?
Absolutely. There are some positives for rural communities in that you can, you have to research and make sure it's a good source of support. You can gain information. You can gain online support groups. Chats, but again, you have to be careful. You know, the focus needs to be on healing and not necessarily talking about, I mean, there are some wonderful grief support groups, but again, they really need to be led by someone that's trained in working with someone who has lost someone to suicide. It's a very complex type of grief, very complex type of loss. So even if it's peer-led, that is fine as long as the person has that some training in working with families of this loss. In the chapter, the South Texas chapter covers 43 counties of South Texas, including many rural areas, and we're trying to reach those communities with volunteers on the ground that are being trained to do education, empower folks on what it takes, be empowered to also take care of your own mental health and wellness, gain some coping skills, gain some strategies, and try and make some connections with local organizations that are there. Sometimes there's more help than people realize. It's just really seeking it out and making the community aware of it.
Carolina Hausman-Stabile, you're our researcher on this. Can you tell us more about how Latinas feel the pressure, particularly with things like social media? Is that something that is a contributing factor?
We know it's a contributing factor for girls in particular. Bullying is associated with increase in suicidal behaviors. What is different about bullying now from what it used to be in the past? That is relentless. It does not only happen in the school or perhaps in the way home, but it happens in the cell phone, which is the center of social life for many children. So kids cannot be away from that experience. On the other hand, this is happening in a context of rapid social change. We see not only an increase in social pressure to succeed, to meet certain standards, but also erosion in our community supports and our family supports. So we come back from school to homes where both our parents are busy and come home late. And it's hard to create moments to encounter each other, to talk. The antidote for suicidal behaviors among young people is family connection, is being able to talk. Families are part of the solution. Sitting down and talking and spending time together with children is critical for their sense of well-being, for their sense of hope, of support, and being part of something greater than me that is going to be there for me when I encounter stressful moments.
But when we talk about the importance of family as a way to inoculate some folks against suicide, that kind of puts a lot of pressure on families when there is especially a suicide and they say, well, I could have done something to stop that. I mean, how do we deal with the people who feel the guilt afterwards?
We deal by talking. Talking allows us both to prevent and identify. So I'm talking specifically about suicidal behaviors, such as suicidal ideation and suicide attempt, which are much more common in young people, people that take their own life in the younger years. It's very, very unusual. So in order to prevent the much more common problems of suicidal ideation and suicidal attempt, talking helps. Talking because we assessed, are we seeing any changes in our children? Are we seeing any changes in our peers? Are we seeing any changes in the behavior of our student? And also allowing us spaces where we can ask, how are you feeling today? How are things going for you? And also facilitates and models behavior. When I am stressed, I talk to my parents who trust me, who don't get upset when I say that things are hard for me. And also it allows us to assess the threshold. It allows us to say, my child's behavior has changed a little bit too much for me to manage. I'm going to take them and seek help in the community, maybe a community health center, maybe the pediatrician that I trust. Talking is important because it gives us a sense of belonging, and we know that sense of belonging is protective for suicidal behaviors, but allows parents also to assess, monitor, and intervene when needed.
I'm going to go back to the phone lines. Get a lot of callers here trying to get you on the air. Rosa, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just wanted to ask if this organization can go to the schools and to when they do the parent summit, when can they bring that to every parent? Because I learned they used to have it before, and I learned a lot by then by having this program and educating the parents to know their kids are under stress, especially when they need to modify some programs for them for learning. Can they send a program to educate parents on the schools?
Okay, Rosa. So the schools, Terry Marbrito with NAMI, the National Alliance of Mental Illness here in San Antonio, do y'all go to schools?
We have a couple of ways that we can engage with schools. First, through the coalition, our local coalition that's supported by NAMI San Antonio and AFSP, where Michelle is, and several other organizations. We can come and talk to parents and school staff and provide some basic training around, again, understanding teenagers, understanding, as someone, one of the callers well said, I'm seeing a difference, you know, that seems too much of a change in my child. And teachers can also be a part of that and understanding, you know, there's something going on with this student. So we can go in and provide that kind of training and education. And then in the fall, NAMI is hoping to bring to Bexar County the Ending the Silence program, where it will be a short curriculum that we can provide to all school staff, to parents, and then also to the students. So students are going to, you know, kids are going to talk to each other. Sometimes, as the researcher said, you know, we need to talk about it in families, but oftentimes kids are talking to each other. And so we need to equip everybody, middle schoolers, high schoolers, with the understanding of, you know, what are the warning signs and how they can be supportive to another student, and most importantly, get that student to a trusted adult. So we want that trusted adult to be a family member, but sometimes maybe it's a teacher, or maybe it's someone in our faith community. So another way that we're trying to educate the community is to work with churches across our community. We have a conference coming up that is completely focused on the faith community coming to grips with understanding, busting stigma around mental health and mental illness, and that's called Pathways to Hope. That's October 6th coming up.
So speaking of educators, Sharice is joining us on the phone. Sharice, you're on the air, and I understand you are an educator.
Yes, I'm actually a two-year-old teacher, and I work in a community where there are foster families, there are children that are from multi-homes, where they've had divorces as young as 1.5 or 2. And I know that those sorts of things, along with the general learning of potty training and ABCs and all of the pressure to learn that, can cause anxiety to develop in children that are that young. And I know when anxiety starts in a young child, it can sometimes morph into depression in middle school, as you were just talking about, and further on into high school. And you hear more about meditation and yoga being taught in classrooms and recognizing behaviors early being taught in classrooms, but how can we help these children that are so young and showing these symptoms of anxiety steer away from what might become depression and mental illness later on in their lives?
All right, Sharice, thank you for that call. And real quickly, Carolina, since we're short on time before we go to break, but we do know that these early traumas can lead to lifelong problems, right?
That's correct. We know that early victimization, for instance, it's predictive of suicidal behaviors later in life. So sexual abuse, violence, witnessing violence. Suicidal behaviors are more typical among children who are growing up in communities that are violent or that are impoverished or they are unstable. So we have to intervene both at the individual level through treatment, at the family level, for instance, providing parenting support, at the community through schools that provide services and that are attuned to the needs of the children, but also through policy. We need to support services, investment in mental health, vote for people who promote agendas that lead to better services in mental health.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. Callers, if you're on hold, stay with us. We'll get you on right after this break. And if you want to call in, the number is 210-614-8980. We are dealing with a national health crisis, suicide. It's important that we all develop a higher level of understanding of what leads to suicide and the pain and the despair of the people who are thinking about it right now, why this is happening. Stay with us. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. The United States is seeing a trend of more and more suicides. This is also happening around the world. It's not just an American problem. And we're trying to let people know that the stigma of asking for help early, we need to reduce that stigma and find a way to help people to realize that the sooner you get help, the better off you will be. Talking about basic assessments when it comes to suicide, asking someone who says, I'm having issues here, talk to them. Ask them, do you have a plan? Then trying to say, what are your thoughts? How long has this been going on? These are some basic questions that you can try to establish how serious this is and how soon do you need to bring in a third party to try to bring in some relief. The number to call in is 210-614-8980. Diane is on the line. Diane, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I have three daughters, grown daughters, and I've suffered some very hateful animosity at the hands of two of my daughters, and this has been going on for 10 years. They don't talk to me anymore, and when I finally got a reason texted to me, it was, we don't like who you are or how you are. And that pretty much cut me to the core, broke my heart. And it's taken me 5 years to get over it, to tell myself I am good enough. I'm just a little more loud. I'm the woman that, you know, won't take any crap off of people. But that doesn't make me bad. And it took me a while to tell myself, with my husband's support and my oldest daughter's support, it's okay to be who you are. You know, but this is also a national phenomenon that I found out parents are going through, that their children are cutting them off. And it's hard some days still to be without them. And I did go to the dark place. Mm-hmm. And that's what I call it, the dark place, where you have to pull yourself up and talk to the people around you.
Exactly.
The people that know you best.
Diane, thank you for calling in with that. I'm sorry that you went through that. Sounds like you were on a path that will be beneficial to you. Terry Mabrito, when you hear Diane talking about that.
Yeah, and Diane,
you're obviously moved by that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. We're so sorry to hear what you've been going through, and yet we're so happy that you called today and shared your experience and shared that, yes, you've been at that dark place. And really, for NAMI, that's kind of what we're all about, is building community and supporting each other. And so I think that there may be a place for you, you know, with our membership, the folks that come together monthly, or perhaps in one of our classes or our support groups. You know, we're also building advocates, and it sounds like you're growing to a place where, you know, you could become a real advocate for others that are struggling. So we just invite you to be involved with caring people who would probably understand some or all of your struggles, and it's just a building of community, and that sounds like you're ready for that. So we would just invite you to be a part of that. Join us and come to some of our general meetings and explore the kind of community that we can offer.
Carolina Hausman-Stabile, can you talk about how far is relief away if a person finds himself in that narrowing of vision and they just think about, you know, all the time about, you know, this is painful, I have to end my life. How hard is it for to turn that individual away from that view?
It's possible. Suicidal behaviors are preventable. Different individuals require different type of interventions and different type of help. But help is available. And if you feel that you cannot stop thinking that you want to die, that you're thinking of ways of making that happen, help is at 911. Don't hesitate. Don't doubt yourself. Go and ask for help. If you don't feel like calling 911, please text, reach out to somebody. Say, I need help. I cannot stop thinking of this. The first step is seeking help, seeking professional help. Walk yourself into an emergency room. Demand help.
Now, there is a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The number is 1-800-273-8255. You can save this number. This number could save a life. That life could be your own. If you are at immediate risk, you can call 911 or your local police or your campus police or someone. Take a person to the nearby hospital emergency room and go through a suicide intervention and assessment. Let's go to another phone caller. This is Kathy. And Kathy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm involved with an organization under the umbrella of the Professional Association of Therapeutic Horsemanship, or PATH. And our organization doesn't just deal with people with physical disabilities, but also those with emotional and mental disabilities. A while back, as I was walking in, a young soldier was walking out, and he had been paired that day on the ground with a big draft horse mare. And her name was Rusty, and he had been grooming her and leading her and learning to be with her. And he suffered from PTSD. And as he was coming out, he said, I want you to know you're doing a good thing here. And I said, why did you say that? Because I knew he was going somewhere. And he said, well, I was able to hear Rusty's heartbeat today, and I decided he mind beating. Now, if we can pair animals with people like this and just save one or two lives, it's worth all the effort that we put into it.
And it doesn't always have to be. Doesn't always have to be a big draft horse. It can be a puppy, a kitty cat, anything like that. These are lifelines that we all can reach out to. Esmeralda has called in. Esmeralda, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I was just wondering what kind of resources there are for parents dealing and advocating with insurance companies, because my daughter attempted suicide and it was a really strenuous fight to get my insurance to help, and then later to find help for myself in dealing with what had happened while she was in the hospital recuperating.
All right. So that's a very practical question, and I'm really glad, Esmeralda, that you called in and talked about that. So Michelle Ramirez with the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention South Texas Chapter, having access to health care and insurance, that's an important part of this.
It's a very important part of it, and there are many families that don't have that access, and they don't have access to mental health coverage. We're lucky in a city like San Antonio, there are some resources for those that are not insured, but really having an advocate to discuss the condition of your family with your health insurance, they're not... You know, sometimes they get a report and they're trying to make a determination on insurance, are they going to cover this? But they're not the ones that have lived with this person and seen that change and seen that risk. And so really having that conversation with your insurance company, I always encourage that, letting them know, you know, this is that drastic change. This is why I feel they need this access to care. And if there is not an insurance, call one of our organizations and we can connect you with resources for those that are not insured.
Byron has called in. Byron, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. So really briefly, I would like to know from the panel the subtle things that we can pick up on to tell that someone's thinking about suicide. My father committed suicide last year, and the two things that stood out afterwards that I didn't realize were, one, that he didn't have access to health care where he was. He moved to Switzerland. He was a resident there and didn't have any health care. The other problem that I didn't realize was that he was isolating himself from everybody, even his wife. And that's a contributing factor when people are saying, I'm not coming to see you again. Then, that's a sign. I didn't know that. So just tell us, what other signs can we pick up on to prevent this?
Okay, Byron, I'm sorry to hear about your father, mm-hmm. but thank you for calling in and telling us that story, because that's going to help others puzzle this through. So, Terry, what else can people look for?
So, you know, in teens and adults, any drastic change, a change from their normal kind of way of relating to others and their social activity, any change that's dramatic, we need to pay attention to. When we stop doing the hobby that we enjoy, when we stop going to the gym, when we stop doing things that are
usually...
Stop
putting on makeup?
Yeah, we don't pay attention to our appearance anymore. It can be any of those kinds of changes that we really do need to pay attention to. And we have to be willing to ask the question, something seems different about you. And so what's going on? I'm here for you. What's happening? But, you know, we typically think of those kinds of things, but it could also be the person who's normally more private. And now suddenly they're more... talkative, they're more demonstrative, they're not acting in their normal sort of personality. Even that side of things is a warning sign.
So we see some mood disturbances. That's a sign as well. Let me go to Carolina Hausman-Stabile, a researcher looking at the prevention and treatment of suicidal behavior, particularly with Latinas. Can you, real quickly, because we're almost out of time, but can you give us a takeaway?
Take away that this is a very challenging issue. It brings up a lot of narrative of pain that was evident in the callers, and also it's very complex because the models that we have to understand suicidal behaviors also vary by age. So it is important to notice, responding to Byron, changes in mood and activity, but also recent experience of trauma. Experiences that shatter your sense of self and your trust. So, for instance, being raped, being assaulted, being violated, that's something that also antecedes sometimes suicidal behaviors.
All right, we're out of time. Carolina Hausman-Stabile, thank you so much for joining us and helping us learn more about suicide and the prevention of it. Terry Marbrito is with NAMI, the San Antonio chapter of the National Alliance of Mental Illness. Michelle Ramirez is a board chair for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention, South Texas chapter. I do want to remind you to seek help if you find yourself in that dark place. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.